folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise. I'm your host, David Price. Thank you for joining me tonight. You are going to hear from Steve in a little bit. But first, I'll run through a few things that I've read in regards to some Secret Wars, some Battle Worlds. The Renew Your Vows has been a standard Spider-Man story, a married with children Spider-Man story. I was wrong. The person who was revealed to be the S.H.I.E.L.D. director was not who I expected it to be. Kind of a, I'm not going to say lackluster reveal, but I don't know why it was so surprising, why it was such a secret, why we couldn't have seen this person's face from the beginning and not hidden in shadows. But regardless, that's the director, and we have things have kind of sped up a little bit towards the conclusion of this series. We have one more issue to go. The family is going to fight together, which is appropriate. I have no problem with that. The art has been consistent. You know, Kubert and the company have done a fantastic job. The villains look really, really strong in this book. But yeah, so that is coming to an end. You have, there's Ghost Racers. I read issues 2 and 3 of that. And again, Felipe Smith really likes his Ghost Rider. And, we're not getting a lot of, story of the other Ghost Racers, which is fine. You know, this is pretty much a story of the race itself I'm looking at. I'm not necessarily looking at individual Ghost Riders or those with the spirit of vengeance in them. But the art has been fantastic, and I really have been enjoying the ride, we'll say, with this book. And House of M, the first issue, I thought was interesting. It's using the House of M name, which I enjoyed. I really enjoyed that miniseries. It was one of my favorites. And so we have the family, Magnus in charge. This is their section of the world, and it works. The last page may have been shocking to some, but I think based on what you know of the characters involved, it makes a little bit of sense. There are some things that I do have to that I'm really looking forward to reading. I read the penultimate issue of Daredevil, the Wade and Somni Daredevil, and that is not necessarily a Secret Wars tie-in. It is under, I'm guessing, the last days of Umbrella. And I have Ant-Man to read too, as far as that subtitle goes. But Daredevil has been one hell of a ride, and I definitely recommend Wade and Somni's Daredevil to anybody who's a fan of the character. If you've been enjoying the Netflix series, especially if somebody wants to read some good Daredevil stories and they don't have much available to them, definitely give them this. But this was it was somewhat unpredictable in a good way. There were things that happened in this issue that I didn't expect, the Kingpin continues to be a prick. He is not an added character not someone to be trifled. So that is pretty much where I am at the moment. There's some things that I have on tap ready to read. I have some login to the site and see what I have to add to the iPad. So I'm going to let Steve do his thing. And I hope everybody has enjoys their extended weekend, those of you that can. And we'll be back soon. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hey, collectors of comic creativity. Steve Ricker here from the Comic Book Bunker, conducting a cosmic celebration you can't miss. You can listen to me over on our sister show, Indie Comic Book Noise, with Kevin Whirlwind X, Andrew the LA Rabbit, and Phil, although it's mostly been those three guys the last several episodes with my crazy summer vacations and availability. But I'll get back on there soon. But you can listen to us talking about the indie books we're reading over there. And both Marvel Noise and Indie Comic Book Noise have Facebook pages and Twitter handles. And my personal Twitter handle is Steve Raker, and you can get a hold of me quick that way. Well, given Disney's acquisition of both Marvel and Star Wars, the Marvel-Star Wars launch of books was inevitable, right? We here on Marvel Noise haven't yet given these books more than just a passing mention of their existence, but I'm here this episode to correct that. It covers some of the Star Wars books. Well, no, make that. This is Marvel Noise, after all. We're going to cover all the Star Wars books that have been out so far. First miniseries, we'll cover the miniseries and then get into the ongoings, but one miniseries was Kanan, the Last Padawan, and this is the history of Kanan from the Star Wars Rebels cartoon. Now, I'm not watching, and neither are any of my kids watching this show, but they've seen it a couple of times at friends' house, and maybe once or twice at home, but not really, don't really enough to look for when it's on, although it seems like it's high quality. But despite not watching the show, I was still able to catch on plenty well enough and enjoy this angle on the Star Wars universe. Kanan the Last Padawan is written by Greg Wiseman with art by Pepe Larraz under Mark Brooks covers. Well, those beautiful Mark Brooks covers with the crazy lighting and just jumps off. Pops right off the page at you. Now, this 5-issue limited series goes 15 years into Kanan's past, to when infamous Order 66 was given during the Clone Wars that made the clone troopers turn on their Jedi generals and exterminate them, wipe them out, so that the Republic would fall and the Empire could rise. Kanan was at that time known as Caleb Doom. He was a Padawan to Master Deepa Bilaba. And we get to see their adventures during the Clone Wars and get to know the clone troopers that, accompanying them in their unit. And then those same clone troopers, have to execute the order to execute them. And Master Deepa, she sacrifices herself, and Caleb reluctantly escapes. He has to go underground. Everything he knows is gone. All the safety of being part of a structure, having leadership, protection, all that stuff's gone. His master's slain, he's being hunted, nowhere to go. Well, he hooks up with this guy, Janis Kazmiri. He's a scoundrel, the likes of Han Solo. Just an aside, Janice's armor and helmet is way cool when they go on a caper together. I don't know if it was designed by Pepe Larraz, but is really cool looking. Well, they have a few back and forths in their relationship, Janice and Caleb do, but eventually really develop trust. Caleb is just getting this new life going when his pursuers, his old clone trooper friends, and they really truly were friends, they had been through thick and thin together, show up and capture him. Capture Caleb. Janis manages to aid in rescuing Caleb, helping him escape. And towards the climax of the book, too, one of the clone troopers sort of breaks his programming and sees the contradiction of Order 66 and the fact that the Jedi were his war comrades, and he acts to help his old friend Padawan escape. After all this, Caleb shucks his friends, ditches Janis, and renames himself Kanan. A nice little tale. Doesn't make me want to go watch the cartoon, but it was still a good little story set in the Star Wars universe. The second limited series was Princess Leia, which also ran for 5 issues, with art by Terry and Rachel Dodson, and is written by Mark Waid. I'm getting the sense that Marvel's putting some good names on these books. This has a cool premise, this Leia series. It's very reflective of a side arc that Leia had during the last Dark Horse series, of the Star Wars titled series, where she was going off and searching for some Alderaan artifacts and survivors and stuff. But here we have Leia similarly setting out across the galaxy to gather up survivors of Alderaan, you know, people. Alderaan was her destroyed home planet. She teams with this pilot named Ivan to go about trying to find and encountering and rescuing these Alderaan natives and various colonies from when the planet was, vibrant. She's got to prove herself over and over again to these different factions as they come upon them. And of course, the Empire is hot on her trail, which keeps the drama thick and the tension high. It's a very good read. It focuses a lot on what it means to Leia to have been and still be princess of her people. And we don't really get to see her truly in that princess mode, except for when she's, you know, putting medals around people's necks at the, you know, in the final scenes of some of those Star Wars movies. But here we really get to see her sense of responsibility and sort of what she's willing to do. She sees herself as a vessel of her people's culture, etc., as a princess would, or at least a good princess. The last limited series that is out still hasn't wrapped up. It's got 3 issues of the 5 out so far, and that is Lando. This is written by Charles Soule with art by Alex Maleev. Interesting choice there for art. It's a fairly fast-paced story with many characters, and Maleev's style of sequential storytelling, like the pace of the action snapshots he chooses to use as adjacent panels, his choices. It's very inconsistent. How he renders faces, he might just put like a couple of dots and a line for a mouth, that kind of a thing sometimes, and sometimes it's like really heavily rendered. So that kind of inconsistency is odd here, because the cast are mostly aliens, so they already look weird, and then when his use of shadows and sometimes it makes it hard to visually track characters. The outer space scenes with the ships and stuff are great, almost Gabriel Hardman-esque. But thankfully, it's a pretty straightforward story, so that helps a lot keep everything in place. We get a glimpse here of Lando sometime after he lost the Millennium Falcon to Han, but before he lands in Cloud City. The Empire here is, you know, fully established. Lando's traveling around with his buddy Lobot. He's pulling off capers and trying to pay off debts and stuff to shady aliens. Lobot here, he's portrayed in almost like a Deathlok kind of a way, constantly fighting the computo implants for sovereignty over his brain and his body. But the pewter's pretty helpful for, you know, computations and doing the functions that are, you know, usual bands of adventurers need a droid for, you know, plugging into a security system and opening a door, whatever it might be, flying a ship. I can download that data, wait a minute. So, to pay off a debt and to keep a price off their heads, Lando and Lobot, in this series, agree to steal a ship, and with the deal that they get to keep the contents of the ship, so they think they're going to get to make out, and they're boss is going to make out because he's going to get the ship that he wants. Everyone wins. And they pull it off. But it turns out that the ship belongs to someone very special to the Empire. And the Empire will stop at nothing to get it back. And then plus, there's the whole thing of what's in the ship, too. You know. It's a good book. Lando assembles a team for the mission, and that they're kind of interesting. By issue 3, I'm pretty much enjoying this collection of adventurers together, and I don't know if they're all going to make it through here alive, but I'm would be interested in seeing another tale with this group of folks that Lando assembles. It's pretty good. Check it out. Now, the two ongoings, one of them, I'm surprised there never was an ongoing in the past, given how long Dark Horse had the license for Star Wars, but I mean, there were plenty of limited series and one-shots and stuff, but Marvel has a Darth Vader ongoing that is up to about issue 8 or so, and the first 6 issues compromise the first story arc, and this book is written by Kieran Gillen, with art by Salvador LaRocca, who is no stranger to drawing fellows in armor, given his sometimes seemingly maddeningly long run on Iron Man. Well, as with the main Star Wars ongoing that we'll get to next, this series is set, you know, after the first Death Star was destroyed in the Battle of Yavin. So, Vader, he's diminished somewhat, you know, in the Emperor's eyes over this whole Death Star thing. Well, Vader gets the sense that he's really not being let in on what is going on in Palpatine's inner circle. He likes to be part of the what's what, and he doesn't know what's what. So the first 6-issue arc is about Vader going off on his own behind the Emperor's back to accomplish 3 objectives. The first thing is he wants to learn the identity of this darned pilot who destroyed the Death Star. You know, the one that the Force is strong with and all that. And to do so, he hires Boba Fett as his agent. And a few issues later, when Boba Fett comes back and tells Vader the name Skywalker, Vader realizes how the Emperor duped him way back when, and that he has a son, that his child survived. It solidified Vader's, like, rogue mindset. He hates his master for reals now. His second objective is to learn the identity and the mission of this outside agent that Palpatine hired. And it turns out that this outside agent has been training, pagan forceless replacements. If you think of the Force as a religion, these are pagan, possible replacements for Vader as Palpatine's, apprentice. And this is all at Palpatine's request. So there's this class of 5 apprentices, and any one of them could possibly replace Vader if Vader, you know, doesn't prove worthy or whatever, despite not being connected to the Force or the Sith at all. So yeah, here's another reason for Vader to totally be against the Emperor. His third objective is to assemble a stealth droid army from the leftover droids of the Clone Wars. And this is for a yet unknown purpose. And to accomplish this, Vader secretly seeks out a female archaeologist named Aphra. And she goes off on covert missions with Vader, for instance, to Geonosis, of all places. And they've got an interesting dynamic together, Aphra and Vader. She thinks she's toast. I mean, she admits that she knew she was dead the minute Vader came and asked her to help him on a mission. Especially it being a secret mission, right? Vader's not going to want to leave any evidence or trail. She's going to know too much, and she's dead. But she's still been serving him quite well. And Vader's, like, sort of, it seems like, becoming to respect her, maybe even care for her. But he is not letting on. But yet, each time she thinks she's outlived her usefulness and she thinks she's toast, Vader lets her live, but he still kind of is under the guise of, you're still going to be useful to me. Like, you know, for now, I'll let you live. So she's got that kind of fear going on, but it's hard to tell. It seems like he's, I'd let her live. She's a pretty cool character. All right, this is the big one. The one you've been waiting for. Not a what if, not an imaginary tale. It is the Star Wars ongoing. written by Jason Aaron with art by John Cassidy for the first 6 issues at least, and 8 issues are out of this series. Now, this story is post-Death Star destruction, just like with Vader. And the first few issues have got Han, Leia, Luke, Chewie, and the droids pulling off a caper to infiltrate and destroy this giant Imperial weapons factory. And during these events, like, Vader shows up, and Han and company have to escape piloting, like, an Imperial walker AT-AT, you know? And Vader, like, lightsabers its leg and makes it fall down and stuff. I mean, it's crazy stuff. Luke and Vader even meet face-to-face, and Luke survives the encounter. I mean, that was so taboo the first time Marvel had the Star Wars license. They weren't even allowed to use Darth Vader because, you know, Empire Strikes Back was coming. In issue 4, we get to see an official Imperial negotiation between Vader and Jabba the Hutt. But what's cool is over in Vader's solo series, we know that Vader's actually secretly paid Jabba a visit beforehand, the day before. And Jabba actually tries to, during the official negotiation, reference aspects of that meeting, and Vader's, like, totally tells him to shut his filthy hut trap up and everything. It's cool. You don't miss anything if you're just reading the series, but if you've read the Vader series too, it is coordinated quite well. And during this time, Luke decides to go back to Tatooine to visit old Ben Kenobi's home that was there for trying to find some more info on the Jedi way. I mean, he doesn't have Ben, he doesn't have a master, he's no Jedi himself yet, but the Force is strong with him. He needs to see what artifacts might be there and be helpful. Vader, though, as we know over in his series, has hired Boba Fett to learn the identity of that darn pilot who blew up the Death Star, right? So Fett tracks Luke to Obi-Wan's lair and confronts him. It's done really satisfactorily. Really a cool Star Wars-y scene. And Luke ends up escaping Fett with Ben's journal. And Fett reports back to Vader the name of the pilot, in a scene that we also got to see over in Vader's series. But we don't get to see him thinking back, you know, realizing how he'd been duped. We only see that in the Vader series. So that's pretty cool. Issues 4 to 6 also have Leia and Han on the run from TIE fighters, and they've got to take Haven in this remote place only to meet someone from Han's past. Issue 7 is a standalone issue that looks back at Ben Kenobi's time in hiding on Tatooine. It's from a journal that Luke acquired, the only thing he got from Ben's dwelling there. And that issue is drawn by Simone Bianchi. And issue 8, we get the new penciling, inking team of Stuart Immonen and Wade Von Grawbadger, who joined Jason Aaron. And it picks right up where 6 left off, following Leia and Han, as well as Luke in their separate storylines there. It's really very enjoyable. I think even more so as the series has progressed, and we get to kind of see what the characters are doing a little more. And certainly with Immonen and Von Grawbadger, their addition, I mean, their art looks just simply fantastic. Really consistent and nice. I would really check this out. I mean, I would check all of these books out. Let your conscience be your guide, you know? Let the Force be with you and all that. Hey, have you Secret Wars readers been noticing what's been going on over in Dan Slott and Mike Allred's Silver Surfer? I mean, it could be quite profound to everything, or it could just be a cute little red herring type tale. I mean, over the course of this Slott-Allred series, the Surfer has again been freed from his duties as Herald. He ends up getting attached to an Earth girl in an interesting set of circumstances. This Earth girl, Cammy... No, I'm just kidding. This Earth girl, she's older and way prettier, but she's just an average New England girl. Dawn Greenwood is her name. Dawn had gotten kidnapped by aliens, and the Surfer met her while rescuing her, long story short. And they have traveled together, their friendship taking some ups and some big downs. But by the end of issue 12, they have shared their first kiss and decided to travel back to Earth, Dawn's home planet. In issues 13 and 14, they head back to Earth, retracing their steps and visiting places from earlier issues, which is kind of neat. And by the time they reach our solar system, though, that final incursion hits that sets off the current 2015 Secret Wars event. And the Surfer and Dawn are warned just in time, and they literally try to out-surf the destruction of reality wave. The universe is crumbling behind them as their cruise in the and Allred depicts this beautifully. And the Surfer spies a tear in the fabric of reality somewhere before them and heads for it. And therefore, like, survives the incursion in some kind of null realm dimension. But the Surfer and Dawn are not alone. There's somebody else there. Glorian. Glorian! Do you remember him? Do you remember who created him? I mean, he's way back from Fantastic Four and Hulk, mostly. I mean, do you know who the Glorian's master is? That's right. The Shaper of Worlds. No prize for anyone who remembered. And the Shaper of Worlds, I think, was once a cosmic cube in its infancy. And the Shaper of Worlds is there in this null dimension. He is the null dimension. And Glorian is discussing using the Shaper of Worlds power through the Silver Surfer's power cosmic to set about the task of creating a new universe that's going to be needed if our heroes survive Battleworld. Oh, and there's this awesome scene where the Surfer is seeing Eternity from behind, and when Eternity turns around, it's like Doom's helmet as the face, and all of reality is just black except for this Battleworld right in the center of Eternity's gut with its little nowhere moon floating around. It's really depicted neat. You should be reading this book if you haven't been. And speaking of Marvel Cosmic, writer Jerry Duggan has wrapped up his very entertaining run, I would have to say, by finally reuniting Nova, Sam Alexander Nova, with his father. Remember, Sam Alexander, he initially found his father's old Nova helmet. And, you know, his father was kooky and kind of hard to be proud of in a lot of ways. And then he was surprised to learn that his dad was really an intergalactic space warrior with the Nova Corps and all that. Well, Sam's had a long journey over this series, trying to, you know, master his powers and making affiliations throughout the Marvel Universe, both cosmic and domestic. And he's been trying to learn of the Nova heritage, and at the same time, all along, he's been searching for his dad, who, the Watcher of all people before being killed, mentioned was still alive out there somewhere. Now, Nova also learned that his father left the Nova Corps, and it seems like possibly, like, in disgrace or as a villain, or was it on a covert mission? Is he a good guy or a bad guy? Man, this really has been some quest for Sam. Issues 29 to 31 are the final issues of the series, and they are drawn by David Baldion with inks by Terry Pallett, entitled A Sort of a Homecoming. And the three-parter opens with Sam returning to Richard Rider's home. He was the first Earth Nova that first appeared in the late 70s, and the tradition of Spider-Man and all that with Marv Wolfman and John Buscema, of all people, in the first issue at least. Well, Nova has found the original Nova's helmet, and he returns it to Richard Rider's folks, which really closes the book on their hope that Rich was still alive out there somewhere. You know, it's like bringing the battle flag, delivering a flag to a family of a fallen soldier. So, Rich fell at the end of the Thanos imperative that wrapped up Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning's long Marvel cosmic tenure, and they were the ones who brought back Richard Rider successfully and had a big long solo series with Rich, as well as all those Annihilation type stories and reviving the Guardians of the Galaxy and all that stuff. So, in this final arc here, Sam really turns up the investigation a notch. He steals, he leaves an IOU, but he steals basically millions of credits from a Chitauri treasury. That's right, the Chitauri from the Marvel Avengers movie, being brought more solidly into the 616 here. He steals these credits so that he can buy information about the ship that his father is supposedly traveling on, so he can track him. And it turns out the Chitauri were already after Nova's old man, and now they're after Sam, too. This really kick-butt Chitauri lieutenant, this huge guy called Warbringer, takes on the Alexanders, as well as threatens to destroy the Earth. And the dialogue and everything, of the way that the pacing is of Dugan's is great. Like, there's this scene where the Warbringer is all mad at the slave master who ran the slave pens that Sam escaped from. And he's like, not only did they escape, but with millions of credits and with a ship and all this stuff. And he says, this is your greatest failure, he says to the underling. And he says, what do you think I should do now? And the underling says, let's go destroy Earth. That ought to get Nova's attention. Then there's a page flip, and it returns to the Warbringer guy. He's saying, hey, that's actually a much better idea than the one I had. I was going to just say something cruel and then kill you. All right, fly us to Earth. We have a planet to destroy. Great pacing, great little moments of humor, sort of almost Whedon-esque, but Dugan has solidified his corner of the Marvel Universe so well now between Nova and the Hulk and Deadpool that I can really say it's Dugan-esque now at this point. Well, I'm not going to give away any, real spoilers here, but it all really gets wrapped up quite satisfactorily with that great pacing that I mentioned. And, did I mention Beta Ray Bill? Huh? This Nova series started out strong with Loeb and McGinnis, but it's honestly been Dugan who's made it a near top of the stack book for me, especially reading it in chunks, like in arcs. One more cosmic book to mention, just quickly, is Guardians of the Galaxy Team Up Number 5, specifically, written by Andy Lanning and Andy Schmidt, with art by, and this is why I wanted to bring it to listeners' attentions, with art by Gustavo Duarte. Gustavo Duarte wrote and drew, he's a great foreign cartoonist who made this wonderful, I think Dark Horse published it, book called Monsters, that are all silent sequential strips involving monsters, and we covered that over on Indie Comic Book Noise episode number 334 in February of 2014, and I just fell in love with this guy's style and his brush. And here Duarte is brought on because it is a team up of Rocket and Cosmo with the Pet Avengers. Speedballs, Cat, Red Wing, Zabu, Lockjaw, Throg. Hilarious, but beautifully rendered because of Duarte, and I was so happy to see Marvel bringing him on board for anything. Hey, before we wrap up, I want to mention that the 16th annual Baltimore Comic Con is coming up September 25th through 27th at the Baltimore Convention Center. And I know I've mentioned it the past several episodes, but I wanted to give a little bit more of a preview of what's going on there, because there's a lot going on there. This is a great con. There's on-site CGC grading of books. There's the Harvey Awards, which are, as many say, comics' most respected awards, certainly comic books' oldest awards. There is a great schedule of kids programming throughout the weekend, a Hero Initiative presence, Media Hollywood guests, of course, and a great artist alley, the Marvel-related guests I'll mention in a minute. But you can get more information on BaltimoreComicCon.com. This site at the Baltimore Convention Center is in an area that is rich with hotels. It is in walking distance to the Inner Harbor. In fact, you can walk to the Inner Harbor on elevated pathways and walkways and courtyards that make you not have to even cross a traffic street or look at a traffic light. It's really cool. A nice place to play around and be there for a multiple-day con rather than just making a one-day visit. Thinking of the Marvel friendly or Friends of Marvel type related guests, we have Neil Adams, Mike Zeck, and John Beattie, you know, the art team on the original Secret Wars series, or Captain America, J.M. DeMatteis' Captain America run, more importantly, Brett Blevins, Mark Buckingham, Bob Budiansky, Sean Chen, Frank Cho, David Finch, Francesco Francavilla, Scott Hanna, Jeff Isherwood, Klaus Janson, Dave Johnson, Tom King, who's going to be writing the Vision book, Barry Kitson, Greg LaRocque, Mike Manley, our friend Ron Mars, everybody's friend Ron Mars, Mike McCone, Mark Morales, Greg Pak, Tom Palmer, Brandon Peterson, Tom Rainey, Walton Louise Simonson, Bart Sears, Charles Soleil, Marcelo Takara, Mark Texiera, Charles Vess, Mark Wade, Marv Wolfman, and did I mention Jim Starlin and Bernie Wrightson? Aw, man. Gonna be such a good time and a great show. Come on down and join me. I'll be there all 3 days, totally just gushing over Bernie and Starlin. You can find me, or at least my drool, near each of their tables. All right, gang. That wraps up another... at least my contribution to this episode. You can listen to us, or at least some of us, over on Indie Comic Book Noise. Again, both shows are on Facebook and Twitter. Stick around and hear Kevin and the Australian contingent talk about what they're reading over on Marvel Unlimited digital service. That's right, it's another installment of the Unlimiteds. All right, until the house has no more ideas, make mine Marvel. Later.
What is that?
I have no idea. You'd think we could just attract ants like normal people. Are you okay, darling?
What was that?
Apocalypse! All who oppose me shall be...
Hey everyone in cyberspace, do they still call it cyberspace anyways? This is the Unlimiteds!
Unlimiteds!
That was terrible. Anyhow, this is where we talk about everything to do with Marvel's all-you-can-eat digital subscription service, Marvel Unlimited. So we have our usual Commonwealth here. I'm Kevin Whirlwind X. We have our Australian friends, Andrew Shaw and Dan Woo! Leaf Insect Man. And hey, by popular demand, we have Andrew the Alley Rabbit sneaking in here from America. What's with that?
I don't think it was anyone's popular demand, but I snuck in anyways.
You know what the whole cyberspace thing reminds me of, though? It reminds me of, like, 29-9 in those books. Like, there was a lot of invading cyberspace, and they were sending robots, like, into computers and into the wires, and it was, you know, like, another plane of existence. But, I don't know, you don't see that stuff so much anymore.
Holy shuck.
Exactly. So what have we been reading?
Who wants to go first?
Well, I know there was that one What If that really shocked me. I was looking for Spider-Girl, which I never got around to reading, because there was What If starring Secret Wars 25 years later.
Ooh.
Which is kind of strange.
Written by one of my favorites, Jay Faber. Farber. However you say it.
Ferber?
Yeah, from we've been promoting a lot of his stuff on Indie Noise, a other comic book show.
Huh.
It's recent stuff?
No, yes. this is I think this is the last issue, or pretty close to the last issue anyways. It was like 114. Huh. So the price had went up, And it was actually extra pages. It was 33 pages because I was reading it, and I'm like, how long? Like, you can just tell sometimes when a comic is going long. So that was quite weird. Well, so this is like an extra Secret Wars issue that I didn't know about.
Yeah, and I thought he did a tremendous job. He's the perfect guy for some team book with new people and cramming a lot of exposition in. And I thought he did a great job of both those things.
Yeah, so the whole thing with this what if is they never got off Battleworld. Like, they were stuck there for 25 years.
Oh. So what is it, like they got lives in like a civilization or whatever?
Yeah, on? And like the villains like start hooking up with the heroes and you get all these weird kids and all this stuff.
Yay.
Yeah, so it's like the next generation. So it's all the different, it's like their kids are now coming of age.
Who hooked up with Doom, who, you gotta tell us? Kid.
Well, I was trying to figure some of these things out because it like someone was like Storm and then there's like a lizard and I'm like, wait a second. And it seems like Dr. Doom and the Enchantress were together at one point.
Yes, but then the Enchantress left him for Thor.
Yeah, she did.
And I think it was like Storm and Wolverine, of course, got together.
Yes, because, you know, you got to keep mutant on mutant. You can't be having any cross-pollination there.
And I'm not sure what happened to Spider-Man. Like, at one point he gets shot by Claw and it sound against the costume, but it looks like Peter Parker isn't inside anymore. It's just like the symbiote is on a skeleton.
Oh, wow. Ooh. Maybe the symbiote, like, slowly ate him.
I don't know. It's just weird. I'm like, are we supposed to think that? Like, because they say Spider-Man doesn't eat anymore or something.
Well, I don't know. So it's you didn't creepy. Read...
No way to put it.
So you didn't read the other what if that was Secret Wars related. They had one that what if the alien creature had possessed Spider-Man.
I did not get to that one.
Yeah, that was a separate one. And that one, you find out that the symbiote basically does, when it finally lets Peter Parker go, he's aged like 50 years, and it just drains him dry. So I wonder if they're using that sort of continuity.
Huh. It's interesting, the Secret Wars one, too, that woman is worthy of the hammer.
Oh, is it like their kid or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Captain America's kid ends up with the sword.
Oh, okay.
And she also keeps stealing his shield. We're running out on missions. And She-Hulk and Hawkeye. So their kid is like a green archer. And okay. And there's a Molecule Man Jr. And a Crusher Kree will even find someone. But what was really sad is when they go, the sad part where they go to Hall of Fallen Heroes. Only Stafford's bone. Basically, in this version, the Beyonder and Galactus and Reed Richards all took each other out.
Ooh.
Yeah, and they made statues. And it's like so many echoes of like Secret Wars stuff in here from like present and past. So
when did this come out?
I was really sad. It's from the 89 series, so 114 issues into that. Who's good with math? Like, quick.
It's not 2000s-ish? After the year 2000? Or before? I gotta look this up.
Yeah, 90s. Interesting. I was trying to... It's gotta be late 90s. Man, I should have looked this up.
It looks late 90s for sure.
Yeah.
It's got that vibe. It's Greg Schiegel and Jose Marzan Jr. are the art team, are the penciler and inker.
Oh, it says 1998 the series went up to.
Oh, wow. So Jay Farber's been active since then.
Yeah, he did like a failed.
Oh wait, not 98. I thought 88.
No, because this had to be well enough after Secret Wars that it would have been a fun throwback. But it's kind of sad they got rid of Magneto. Was also dead. Monica Rambeau is gone. Bulldozer is gone. Spider Woman, Doc Ock. Yeah, there were quite a few that didn't make it.
Who's the Bulldozer?
He was part of the Wrecking Crew.
Oh, okay.
Driver. I don't know if Pile Driver and Cannon or Axel made it or not.
And of course,
clearly the Lizard.
And then you have your ending that's sort of like traumatic, but also like they could have done another story.
Yeah, basically they've never been able to get back home, but it seems like they don't really want to get back home, maybe, and they've found this piece. So the kids figure out the way to get back home using the magic combined with the hammer, which is, you know, America's kid has it. So they get back to Earth, and the Earth is overrun by Sentinels. And the kids all decide to stay. So it's Storm and Wolverine, the Green Archer, the Thors, and Enchantress's son, who's a magic user. He's also strong. And then a Wasp and the Human Torch, apparently, because it looks like a fiery little man Wasp. And they decide to stay in the new planet and fight because, you know, they've been warned about, told them about mutants and everything. Because there's a funny segment where you see the Iron Man armor, but it's not Iron Man inside. Yeah, I thought it was, like I said, none of this, you have to kind of glean it as you read the thing. But their code names are Mustang as the Green Archer, Firefly Wasp, Storm, and it looks like Storm, but it's also Wolverine's kid. But it's just buried throughout the different issues. It's precipitated by Doom's kid decides to take out Doom and restart the war.
One of them's called Chokehold. What's the deal with that? I'm looking at the,
I just wish they,
Wikipedia.
Someone made retro toys in the Secret Wars style for all these characters.
Kurt Connors Jr. Gator.
Yeah.
I looked this up. Oh, there he is. There's a picture of him.
But right. The real curious thing is I'm not sure how Rogue and Captain America have a kid.
There wasn't
well,
there some weird
Andrew,
thing
when
going
a man
on...
and a woman love each other very much.
Yes, but she would steal his essence. And then would she?
Yeah. Maybe that's what kills him.
We're getting a bit over the PG now, aren't we?
Yes. Well, you know. Well, anyways, the funny bit is Iron Man armor lifts up and it's Professor X.
Ah.
Ooh.
But I think it's cool because it lets him walk around, you know. So there's lots of fun second generation madness. If you want to see your heroes hook up, that was one of the fun things about What If and the M squared and all that stuff is, you know, when you move to the next generation and see the mashup of powers and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a sucker for a What If story.
You're like a legendary What If fan. Like, I don't know, Moon Knight or What If. It's like, ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did a
segment with
Steve years ago about the first run of What If. We went through every issue.
You have all the What Ifs?
I have all the first run of it.
Oh, okay, sure, yeah.
Which has
well,
Pimp,
what if and...
Pimp Conan.
We need the What If Andrew Shaw Never Read Moon Knight comic.
Oh.
God.
What if I never read Thunderbolts? Dan, have you read something?
Yeah. I was able to squeeze in an issue of Tomb of Dracula. Number one, actually. I've been meaning to get on the Tomb of Dracula bus or omnibus. I meant to get the omnibus as well a while ago, but just didn't happen. And now this Marvel Unlimited thing, when I got it, I thought, ooh, I can read some Tomb of Dracula. But I want to read more. I mean, I like the first issue well enough, but I thought maybe I should... try to read more than one thing so I can bring just more than just one issue to the table during this recording. But anyway, Tomb of Dracula number one, it's by Jerry Conway and Gene Colan. And I'm not sure if this is correct because like the Marvel Unlimited details page has messed me up in the past.
Yeah, I usually look inside the comic or somewhere else.
Like cover artist Neil Adams? Does that look like the Neil Adams thing? Okay, cool. Sounds good. I'm not sure if other issues are going to be like this. It's just a girl that gets kind of seduced or whatever. And I don't know. I mean, it's not. I didn't think it was anything special, but it was done pretty well. And I like the kind of the atmosphere of it all. And I think there's some penciler changes later on. So I'm not sure if it's going to stay the same, like in terms of the feel of the comic, but, yeah, I mean, if I'm awake, after the recording, I might read some more, not really much to say, based on that just one issue, but thumbs up for me.
Yeah, I bought all three of the Omnibus on discount just from hearing like the legends of that book with like Blade and Gene Colan and everything.
How does the series go over the course of three omnibuses? Like what happened? Like is it just kind of scary thing? I'm guessing there's more of a long form story, or is it mainly just one shots or done in once?
I know Doctor Strange becomes involved because there's supernatural vampires and magic, kind of all just goes together. So I think at some point there's like a big thing about, I'm trying to remember the exact details, but like him, like not exiling vampires from Earth or vampires, like something to do with like vampires can't be created or they are like they can't do certain things. Like there's some kind of like status quo thing with vampires that happens when Doctor Strange is around. I think there's some kind of formula and stuff like that. And by the third omnibus, it's like the series ends, but they still have more like black and white magazines or more like one shots to like pile into the third omnibus. So, the 70s with horror, there's a lot of ground to cover.
It's the best time for it.
I don't know, that cover's not particularly Neil. I mean, the woman looks Neil Adamsy, but Dracula's pretty not quite what I expect from, the cover's not as dynamic as your typical Neil Adams. But what's weird is it says something about a sample when I try and click on it, as opposed to normally it's read the whole issue.
Yeah, I'm not seeing a link now that says read this issue now. I thought I was just not logged in, but
I think you cracked the code, Dan. You snuck in under the wire.
Yes. It says it's on like it's got the U, little icon thing that says it's on unlimited.
Right, now it's on. But it's not. Yeah, they must have.
What is the deal? Yeah, maybe so.
This is another one of those glitches. Like in Marvel Unlimited, it's pretty good, but sometimes you'll notice a glitch where it'll say read now, but if you actually go into the issue to read the details, the read now link won't actually be in there. So it's like you have to be outside. Like sometimes that's the trick to get into an issue. I know it's like terrible, but you gotta figure there's gonna be some broken links or something somewhere.
Yeah, sometimes I find out comics or go like get the link to read them just from Google. I hate searching from the Marvel Unlimited interface. Sometimes it just throws up like the weirdest results that I wasn't even after.
Yeah,
you are not joking on that interface issue. I'm always having trouble finding. I mean, like Kevin said, you find weird stuff when you're looking for Spider Girl and got What If Secret Wars.
Well, her first appearance was in What If, so this, yeah. There's a Spider-Girl number 0, so you don't have to look for the What If issue that I discovered later on, so that's much, much better.
Oh, is that do they reprint the What If Spider-Girl in that 0 issue?
Yeah, because I wanted to check to see if, what if I'm, if I was reading the right thing, they could have had a 0 come along, I don't know, maybe a year or two into the run, and I'm like, well, I don't want to mess this up type of thing. So I checked it out, and I'm like, yeah, they both, the 1 and the 0 came out around the same time, so the 0 is the reprint.
So which Spider-Girl were you looking for?
The original, Mayday.
Maple, okay.
Yeah, but I think it was because of Spider-Verse. I've never read the original Spider-Girl stuff, so I was kind of looking around to see how much there was, and I think the whole run is there.
She in Spider-Verse?
Yeah. Something pretty bad happens in a prelude issue, too.
Wait, the What If thing? Oh, the 0 issue. Which prelude?
No, in Spider-Verse.
Oh, okay, sure.
Before she joins up with everybody else.
Yeah. They had
some. Oh, you know what? Yes. I remember. Oh, and then, yeah, there was a... Oh, something about the baby. Or the baby brother. That was an ongoing thing, right? Like, during the series. Like, oh, I gotta protect my baby brother, Ben, or whatever his name is. Or am I confusing that with something else?
That sounds about right to me.
Yeah, right. Probably.
I don't want to say it too much in case any of our listeners haven't read Spider-Verse. That's pretty good event from not even like a big Spider-Man fan. I like, you know, coming back during the big things, but I really enjoy that a lot.
Yeah, it's a good one.
What have you guys been what else have you been reading?
I read two Union Jack miniseries that are on Unlimited. The first one is from 1998, written by Ben Raab, drawn by John Cassaday, and it's really good Cassaday art.
This seems like early Cassaday.
Yeah, well, 98. But that one's got to do with Union Jack hunting down vampires.
Ooh. Is it team up with Blade?
No, no Blade. Sorry. And the second one was from 2006, Christos Gage and Mike Perkins, sort of set around the Brubaker Captain America time as well.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
Yeah, that one was good. I really liked the second one. I liked the first one, but the second one was better. It was more, they had a lot of terrorist attacks in Britain at the time, and all these villains were popping up, and, you know, Batroc the Leaper shows up, and...
Yes. Or,
yeah, you know, there's a heap of them. So I really like that one too.
I think the Arabian Knight was in that one too.
Yeah.
This is like an ongoing thing where the Arabian Knight just happens to show up on the podcast every month.
Who's the Arabian Knight? Like, what is his thing?
It was a contest of champions, like Marvel's first. I think it was a solo mini, 3 issues.
Yep.
And they had all these like stereotypical heroes from all these different nations. But they like reinvented the Arabian Knight rather than he's just, you know, it's on a carpet. They changed him into something more.
Well, I think the original one had a flying carpet, but yeah. In this series, he's had the carpet. He had it unthreaded and threaded into a costume.
That's genius.
Yeah, and so it's like it stops bullets and knives and stuff. Like, it's bulletproof and invincible, and which is a really cool idea.
Yeah, the Irish superhero was like the. All dressed in green with shamrocks.
You know what I realized? I read the first issue of that Union Jack. I never, like the first one from, what was it, 98? I only read the third issue of that one, like back in the day. Because I remember getting a bunch of back issues, and I got the third issue, and I'm like, that was a really good third issue, but I like never got around to reading the rest of the series.
It's on there, and it's good. It's really nice Cassaday art. It's the art we got from him on, what's that series we always talk about, Dan?
Planetary?
Yeah, Planetary. It's that sort of art. It's when he was at his best, whereas the more recent stuff that he did on Uncanny Avengers and some of the covers he's done lately hasn't been his best work.
Did you notice these issues were like supersized, like 33 pages again?
Yeah, they're huge.
Yeah.
Good read.
I read another What If. I was all about the What Ifs.
What If did you read?
What if Aunt May had died instead of Uncle Ben?
Ooh.
I think I read that, unless they've just done that story a bunch of times.
Well, this is I don't know. Like,
I think it had a horrible ending or something.
Is that from the original series?
No, it isn't.
Okay.
This is one I think I was going to get, but then I got like a little burnt out from the I think this is the first batch of the new What Ifs that Marvel...
I think the original run has What If Uncle Ben Had Lived.
Yes.
Huh.
Okay.
But this is like one of the... Like, I've read a lot of Brubaker stuff, and this was actually a Brubaker-written story I had never read.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that was kind of strange in itself, but it's just like a comic shop owner telling someone, like, in the store, like, oh, this is... Did you ever hear the story about what happened? And it's like some kind of, like, at first it's kind of like a mopey emo, like Peter Parker.
So Spider-Man 3, Peter Parker.
Sort of, because like he reveals his secret identity. Like, he gets so angry at one point, like, his clothes come off, and, like, he has his costume underneath.
I hate when that happens.
I know, so then Uncle Ben's like, you're a Spider-Man.
Is that the one where they both become criminals? Or one of them, at least? But, well, like, kind of Uncle Ben just excuses it or something?
Well, Uncle Ben goes to jail because I guess Peter's going to get tagged with the killing the burglar type of thing.
Oh, and then Uncle Ben takes.
So the, yeah, Uncle Ben's like, "Well, I'm not gonna let you throw your life away." So Uncle Ben like gives himself up. Oh. But then like Spider-Man's not well adjusted. he ends up like going to these different homes and everything, and like some of his cast gets in there. Like while he's in this place, he runs into like Flash Thompson and like Harry Osborn, and they're like bullying him. And everything, but the villains still sort of show up in that world. So then, at some point, he's just like, "Well, I'm just gonna break Uncle Ben out of jail and like all this crazy stuff."
Well, it also has a classic what if trope, which is right after it changes, they have to reference something that happened in the comics, but the reverse outcome happens.
Yeah.
In this instance, JJJ's kid dies in the moon, which is what Spider-Man. Two or whatever, where he saves him from the capsule, and that's always a classic one. You know, like the first moment things start to change, we gotta go back to the source serial and show the other side.
So yeah,
they kept the Watcher in charge of all the what ifs.
I think Bendis was in charge of these what ifs.
Well, there's a Daredevil one that Bendis pretty much tells the story. He's sitting in a bar talking to someone. You know, let me tell you this story, and it's actually Bendis drawn into the comic.
Well, he's bald, so, you know, the Watcher is bald. It works well enough.
So you just want a bald guy. It doesn't matter if it's the Watcher.
Exactly.
Wasn't he the Watcher and Brian K. Vaughan in What If? Or Waha? Or the funny one?
What Waha?
I don't know. It might have been a what. One of the what. I don't even know if it's like an actual what if and not one of the other what. What does or whatever, but him and Brian K. Vaughan was wearing the what to get.
I just remember that issue of like Ultimate Spider-Man Team Up where they actually went to the Marvel offices and like Bill Jamis with a Skrull and everything.
I gotta get a list of all the times that like creators have appeared in their own books or someone else's books.
Like when Kirby was God in the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
That's a fine tradition.
Yeah.
Well, we covered it in Daredevil, too. When we did our huge retrospective, they had an issue like that.
Yeah, wasn't there some, like, henchmen that were, like, comedians? Like, a bunch of comedians were, like, the henchmen in Daredevil and a bunch of... But you wouldn't really know it if you didn't.
Well, like it wasn't Daredevil
super obvious. It wasn't like the Daredevil movie where I don't know. I thought that was more in your face.
Well, they've had Saturday Night Live cast and David Letterman. A lot of people have come into the Marvel comic.
That's one of my favorite Marvel team-up issues with the Not Ready for Primetime players. John Belushi on the cover.
My Marvel Unlimited experience was, in some ways, this current batch was propped by Kevin, I think. Who mentioned that the Age of Apocalypse event was on. But the problem was you don't get it through the comic event. There was another page that I have trouble finding, so I had to bookmark it, that has it all listed out. But you can get there by browsing the events.
Yeah.
There's actually a better page that has it all. Because I was a little bit worried at first because the preview issues aren't all on MU. But so far, all the main issues are on MU. But the reading order is really weird. It starts with the Blink limited series, which was well after the end of the series. Oh. And the other thing that's weird is it only has the first three out of four. And then it tells you to skip. And so I went and read the fourth one. Oh, it's on the system. It just wasn't in their suggested reading order. And I'm like... Wait, I'm going to read three of these and stop with the...
Was there a reason why? Like, when you read it, is it like the story just after three jumps to the Age of Apocalypse thing or what?
Oh,
like,
no. After three, I was liking it, and then it really takes a... It's not a good series. I like the character Blink, but they... Annihilus gets reborn as, like, this handsome guy. It's a goofy story.
Is it set before Age of Apocalypse?
No, it's set. What happens is she crosses over into the negative, this other version of the negative zone.
Okay.
And in that version, Annihilus was thought to be killed, but really, I think Blastar had taken over. but he had just been converted into this handsome prince that fell in love with Blink. But it really turned out that he was, you know, going to be turned back into his insect evil form soon. It was...
Oh, well.
That sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, it wasn't... it was funny, but it was just like, wow, this is so far from any...
Who wrote it?
Annihilus. Who was on the Blink Limited series?
Didn't Judd Winnick, like, help out on that series because he was launching Exiles after that?
Okay.
This was still because it was still 2000, so this is my first time reading it. I was unaware of, like, I kind of vaguely knew the character more probably from the movies and other media than actual from the comic book. Mm. But gets an argument with Magneto and then goes to the negative zone, and that's where the whole Apocalypse Blastar, was like this, you know, kind of a dashing figure. It was a weird thing.
So what's what comes after that, according to the event list?
I disagree with this list.
Yeah, so there's those kind of things. The other thing that's odd is their reading order really has you jumping around.
I wanted to hear about what else? What's next? Is it like the main? Like, I think there was an Alpha and Omega.
Yeah, got the omnibus here, and that one starts off with a couple of X-Men issues, and then all of a sudden it jumps into the miniseries, and then it gives you like one issue per, and like, say they're 4-issue miniseries, so you get issue one of this one, issue one, then issue two, then issue three. Like it really breaks it up.
That's cool. I can do that. Is it like I think before that, Legion Quest? I think it was Legion that triggers the thing.
Yeah. But best way to do it, as Andrew said, go to... I know on the app it's really easy to find. It just says events up the top when you go to browse.
Yeah.
And it gives you the exact reading order there.
Okay, cool.
But I wouldn't read the Blink thing first. Like, because that was published years later, so it's not giving you the original flavor.
It seems a bit strange.
Oh, I mean, I understand if it was a prequel thing, but if it's not even, like, related...
I think it's somewhat related because it has Blink, but there's a split in the series because they tried to fit it in.
Okay.
I would say read, like, if you're really interested, read that after the series because, I guess there's chronological order and then there's publishing order and everything. Mm. So, I don't know.
So he's never read it? Like, back in the day?
No. Yeah, he hasn't read a lot of 90s stuff.
I'm about, I think... halfway through the omnibus, and I'm struggling a little bit, partly because I'm not a big X-Men fan, but also partly because some of the art is so 90s and so hard to look at.
Yeah.
So I have struggled. It's one of those ones that I read a few pages of, then I put it aside for 3 or 4 months.
See, I read the issues, well, a lot of the issues, I should say, not everyone, because I was buying off the newsstands and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I read a lot of it back in the day, and I was like, this is so awesome and everything. But, you know, I was, like, new to comics.
Mm.
So I think if you were of a certain age reading it at the time, you probably have fond memories of something like that. And they sort of did one of the 90s X-Men cartoons. They sort of did an episode that was sort of like that.
I'm listing whenever someone mentions something, like you mentioned Exiles.
Yeah.
I added to my list of future to read list, and it just keeps growing every time we we speak about this.
Yeah, Exiles was good.
Yeah, Exiles was good.
There's a few bumps in the road when Chuck Austin like comes on for 8 issues or whatever, but otherwise, you know.
That seems to happen a lot with Chuck Austin.
I know.
I came across something Chuck Austin related, and I thought, whoa, this is Chuck Austin? This is pretty good. But I can't remember now. I didn't list it on my spreadsheet.
Yeah, like everything wasn't... It's not like everything he wrote was terrible. It just seems like he's the poster child for some of those things.
Yeah. Hey, Dan, did you read that last Avengers story?
Yes. Oh, I forgot to add that to my list. Yeah.
What did you think?
I liked it quite a bit. I thought, when they started fighting, it's like, oh, now you're just dead, or now your leg's just blown off. Like, it was a bit quick, but I like how, and also keeping in mind when this came out, because, like, maybe if it came out today, I wouldn't think, have the same opinion, but knowing that it came out back then, it didn't seem like Marvel was doing anything like this. I mean, there might have been, like, future stories set in the future, but it felt, like, very European in terms of the art.
Well, yeah, that art, like, it was Ariel Olivetti, whose art I haven't been a big fan of. Mm. But I found it was really, like, a cross between Sienkiewicz and Richard Corbin, almost.
Yeah. It wasn't the usual Ariel Olivetti art that I'm used to.
The digital stuff that he normally does.
Yeah, I was going to say, as soon as he, like, gets into the computer stuff, less of a fan.
Yeah. But this is really pretty. I'd love to track down the issues of it, because there's only two issues. I'd love to know how hard they are to find.
So is it, like, 40 pages each? Like, with digital, I can't tell. having a fun time, I can't tell how many pages.
Yeah, it seems like it's about that much. Maybe 48 pages or something. But yeah, I'd love to track them down, because I really like the story.
Oh, it's a pretty good length as well. I like the, like, two issues, but, you know, bigger issues.
Yeah.
It's a good way to just tell a story, not spend too much time, you know, like, even 4 or 6 issues arc or whatever.
But, yeah, it'd be a 4-issue trade these days.
Mm.
You know, the Tomb of Dracula, I can confirm that if you go into the issue, it says read a sample. But if you stay outside and just go to the series, you can read now.
Oh, okay. I'm going to try that. Yeah, it kills me that this Marvel Unlimited, I feel like sometimes I designed the website, like, with my limited knowledge of designing websites, like, did I do this, like, when I was asleep or something?
Well, the thing is, if I'm looking for a series, like, I'll just, like, I don't actually search on the website. Like, that would be crazy. Because it's a common thing on websites where their search isn't optimized for what you're searching for. So I always use their, like, series listing and then Control F and just plug in whatever title I want. And then it brings me down to the title. Because they have all the titles in there, even if they're not on Marvel Unlimited. So
I found when you go into... like, you go by character, so you find, like, say I was looking up, you know, I wanted to read more of MODOK, and it lists about 7 or 8 issues of MODOK, but then I go to the main page and it's got, okay, well, here's the first issue that MODOK ever appeared in, but that's not listed under his name.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird. Like, I don't think they've put them all together yet. They're still working out the kinks.
Yeah.
It's maybe best to find internet search the title and then direct look up the issue and see if it's on there.
Yeah.
So you're going to go into your Age of Apocalypse stuff now?
Yes.
Okay.
Did you guys hear any of that? I don't know when I lost you.
Well, we heard about the Blink stuff, and I think you started getting into, like, the Legion quest, and then you were, like, dropped.
Okay. Well, just to reiterate, for those of you not aware, Age of Apocalypse was a stunt where it was an alternate reality where Legion ended up killing Professor X. And so it's created a whole different timeline where Magneto was kind of running the mutants and Apocalypse takes over. So it's Apocalypse destroying the whole world. He's took over the United States and there's parts that are still fighting. And mutants are in charge, and humans are being killed, and Magneto leads a bunch of mutant freedom fighters trying to help the humans. Hmm. Was that fair, Kevin?
Yeah. I would also say at the time it was kind of shocking because X-Men was, like, the number one book, and then Marvel says, hey, we're canceling all the X-books.
Yeah.
No great loss.
Oh, jerk.
So I was not reading comics at the time, so I'm going back, inspired by the Age of Apocalypse tie-in comic, to read this old series. And also because while the preview issues were pretty bad as far as not being on MU, so far all the core issues are on. So they just canceled all the titles and replaced them. Yeah. So I'm reading now X-Man is one title, singular, Factor which is X. Just kind of funny.
X-Men is Cable, right? I mean, that's what replaced the Cable book, but it's Nate Gray, not necessarily him.
Yeah, the thing is, that's the one book that survived the Age of Apocalypse. Like, that just kept on going after the event was over, which is kind of interesting, because then you had two Cables in the same universe.
Was it because it was really popular, or they just thought, oh, we could tell stories with this guy?
Probably both. They probably thought, you know, some kind of legacy we can launch out of this and have another popular book.
I thought that you mentioned Factor X and a few other titles. I thought, like, I like that part of the stunt where it's still the same kind of characters, but of course, it's because it's a different universe. We're renaming it, like, what's the Generation X one? Generation X or something?
Generation X, I think.
Next, yeah.
Yeah.
And what are the
Generation
other
Generation Next.
Names? The Wolverine one is where he's, like, it's all hardcore. I have no hand! You know, that's a 90s thing. But it's Weapon X, and yeah, he's, like, okay. He's like with Jean Grey.
Mm. Yeah, they're a couple, and they leave Magneto's group to form their own two-person unit. But the artwork is pretty extreme, I gotta say. Like,
yep.
It made me laugh at first. Like, Colossus is literally the size of like an entire sports team put into one person.
Would you say there's a manga influence, Andrew?
It is, but. The other thing I love is Wolverine's claws are, like, longer than his arm usually. So.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's hard to watch a lot of the action, too, sometimes in them.
So, well, I definitely wouldn't suggest going panel to panel because there's so many splash pages and double page splashes. But there is a remarkable consistency to the story, which is... like I said, in the beginning, it's a little boring because they keep restating everything. But it is a complete world. I just was introduced to the Sugar Man character.
Oh, the Sugar Man.
Which I know is a favorite of Super Steve's. So, but, yeah, it's a fun world. Like, this is the way to do it. It's just a little bit frustrating because, like I said, you have to keep going back to the main page to figure out the reading order for the next one. And back and forth and back and forth. But, yeah, I mean, why not, you know? It's a 90s adventure, and everyone's angst-filled, and the body count is ridiculous. I just read where they culled the entire city of Chicago for the most part. And Apocalypse looks pretty hulked out, too. Him and Magneto have been hitting the gym and the steroids like mad.
Well, in that kind of world, maybe you need to be doing that. Like, you're not going to survive.
Unless you have muscles on top of muscles on top of muscles. But in that world, Rogue and Magneto are together. And Gambit was in love with Rogue but couldn't have her, so he formed his own group. That's Gambit and the Externals. And Warren Worthington Angel has a kind of a neutral club where he's sort of like the black market dealer and everyone works deals around him. And that's Heaven or Haven. Can't remember the name. And then down in the Savage Land, there's a whole separate world. But I think that a lot of it, I don't know, if you were just reading, if this was your first comic, I think it would be kind of weird because a lot of what makes it interesting is we know these characters and this is another version. Yeah, so Sabretooth is a good guy here.
I have an action figure that Sabretooth. I was really into like that costume and how he was in that series.
Yeah, he and Wild Child. He keeps Wild Child on a chain and carries him around.
It's so weird, though.
And there's Excalibur as another title. But it's X with an X.
Because the 90s were edgy.
Yeah.
Calibur, yes. Calibre or whatever. Not
well, X. Well, this is a series that Blink pretty much became somebody because they killed off Blink for Generation X, like, before this, and no one really cared about her, and then she shows up in this series, and everyone's like, she's so awesome!
What was Blink like before? I didn't know she was, she existed before Age of Apocalypse. What was she like?
Yeah, basically nothing. Like, nothing memorable. She was just one of the characters they introduced. Like, they did a sort of, like, prelude thing in Uncanny X-Men. It might have been the Phalanx Convalent? I don't remember. There was some event that introduced Generation X and Uncanny X-Men before they got their own book. And, yeah, I think she was killed by the Phalanx. And it was just, you know, she was basically a nobody. No one wanted to see her return. Like, she didn't. She wasn't a character. But they totally, like, reinvented her for Age of Apocalypse, and then everyone loved her.
And then had a romance with a reformed nihilist in a different body.
Did you mention Bishop?
Bishop is the catalyst. He was sent from the real 616 to this alternate dimension, and he's the one that puts the idea in Magneto's head that that his reality is the wrong one. And so Magneto's going to start assembling the pieces to presumably restore the status quo. I mean, at the time, I'm sure people didn't realize that. But so he's collecting all these different artifacts, the McCran crystal and this, that, and the other thing. And I assume at the end of this event, it's going to be they decide to put the Earth back to the regular 616 style. But I'm maybe only like a dozen issues in or whatever. So I think, I'm sure it's going to go for 100 issues or something with all the different tie-ins and everything.
I don't remember like a lot of the side or the issues other than the main, like the Alpha and Omega. I didn't read a lot of them back in the day, but were there other characters that weren't X-Men or mutants?
Well, they did an X-Universe book that had like Bruce Banner and, you know, like other regular like people, and they weren't getting along so well. And I don't want to spoil anything, but the UK or Europe is kind of a place you want to be. Not that the Age of Apocalypse is a world you want to be on at all.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the early events is a big, the Sentinels are the good guys, and they're based in Europe, and they evacuate a lot of humans off the coast of North America. And so I'm sure Kevin loved it because Canada gets a pretty prominent role in some of this. Oh, so I can see a young Kevin being like.
With my love of maps and everything, I remember drawing out other maps and like role-playing Age of Apocalypse and maps and like drawing my own comics in like alternate realities because of this. It was a big thing.
That's what I love when there's an alternate reality story. Like, this is what America looks like now. This is where how it's split up, like Old Man Logan.
Yeah.
Like there's a big map where these are all how the villains split up America. So I always like seeing that stuff.
And there is a what if, but I'm saving that for the end, obviously.
Hmm. Is that all you've been reading on Marvel Unlimited?
I picked up some of those what if issues and a few, but I'm really trying because it's tough to. I'm not reading these in big. I'll read like an issue or two at a time. And with my lousy memory, it's tough for me to be like, wait, what just happened?
I thought it was going to be unlimited. Why are we stopping? Well, to be continued.
Yeah, that's good. To be continued.
I already checked out, boys. I'm reading Modeling with Millie number 44 on my
mind. Yes. Don't tell me what happens. I'm
only on 43. It's the only Modeling with Millie issue on Marvel Unlimited, so join me if you will.
We'll go in depth next time.
We will.
We'll do it page by page, I reckon.
When you look into a mirror, do you like what's looking at you? Now that you've seen your true reflections, what on earth are you gonna do? Find some inspiration, it's down deep inside of you. I'm in your situation, yeah. Your whole life is ahead of you. Your whole life is ahead of you. Remember the times you hung out with the boys now. Remember the things you used to say. I thought by now you'd be the president. But after all that was yesterday, you've had time to go out in the world now, but you chose to run away. When people ask you what you're doing now, you don't even know what to say. destruction. It's down deep inside of you. I'm in your situation, yeah. Your whole life is ahead of you. Your whole life is ahead of you. Find some inspiration. It's down deep inside of you.
Ahead of you. Find some inspiration. this down deep inside of you. Find some inspiration. It's down deep inside of you. Find some inspiration. It's down deep inside of you. Find some inspiration. It's down deep inside of you. Find some inspiration. It's down deep inside of you. Find some inspiration.
Inspiration.
It's down deep inside of you. Find some inspiration. It's down deep inside of you.